American Freedom Radio presents
the only broadcast information no other media outlet would dare to understand. The sonic entity known as O'Shelly and the Freak.
Oh, well, stuck mute buttons and all. Here we go with O'Shelly and the Greek here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Now, it is fascinating to note that we have some sort of an issue at the moment, but I assume that all these things will be cleared up and we'll be able to take your questions and get your input through the Skype convention at O'Shelly and the Greek on Skype, which the Greek has yet to join me, by the way. But we have O'Shelly and the Greek on Skype. You can call in. Also, we should have the phone lines up rather shortly at 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525. And, since this is supposed to be the final broadcast of this particular sonic entity, I advise that if you have thought about getting in on the discussion, you do so. Anyway, let's see what happens. Well, like I say, the Greek is I think attempting to join me now, and we will hear from him shortly. I've got to say that this has been an interesting adventure. I don't want to comment too much without the other half of the show with me. Let's see what's going on. Because, this is humorous. This is very humorous. Anyway, let's see what happens. It would be, and I went to uncommonradio.com, earlier in the week because somebody had pointed out to me that the banner was put up there stating that this would be the final broadcast, and actually the Greek was looking for input as to what he should do next, at the website. And, I found that interesting. I do have the phone lines up, by the way, at 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525. And not sure what's going to happen here. If you want to call in, though, by all means, join in. So, let's see. I'm getting messages on the Skype already. You know, this is kind of entertaining. All right, let's try and grab the other Skype ID, Mr. Bordop, the one that is generally used by the Greek, and see if that works, because for some reason we're not able to join him into the discussion. However, as I said, for you, the listener, 218-339-8525 is the available way for you to engage. I guess the Skype convention will not be available unless you contact charles.o'shelly, which is my Skype ID. I will drag you in. But here we go. Let's see what happens here. I love this, by the way, because, you know, my stuff sabotages me every now and then. And I'm wondering if the Greek in his wisdom was not able to sort out his Skype, which I would find kind of funny. But anyhow, let's see if we can get him online and into the conversation. Well, it has been a fascinating set of episodes, that's for sure. We did this the first time, I think beginning in 2015, and it was every Saturday, you know, every Saturday according to the Pope's work schedule and all that kind of good stuff. You know, that thing that allegedly they call a calendar, which is a timepiece relative to what's happening on this surface of this particular planet, I guess. And we'd begun it then, and then, well, let's see now. This would be episode 12 this time around. So I guess for the past 12 weeks, there was the reloaded version of this show. In between, he did something called Uncommon Sense or Uncommon Sense Radio. I can't remember the title exactly. I think it was Uncommon Radio with Seth Michaels. And some people have said that they don't enjoy my commentary so much that they kind of enjoyed Seth a lot more than they did me. Who knows? Maybe Seth will return for the next Greek Sonic project. Let's see if we can somehow get the man in here. Maybe he'll have to call in. 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525. Oh, that would be just too funny if he had to join in via cell phone or something. Well, I can conduct a show that way anyway. Doesn't matter. I could sit here and talk to a ham sandwich if I felt like it. And, you know, I could make it somewhat interesting for you. I'm sure of that. And with, you know, with some of the guests I've had on occasion, I could say that a ham sandwich would be a step up. But, you know, we all make mistakes. So let's see what happens here, folks. Like I say, you can join into the conversation at 218-339-8525. I don't know. What should we do here, Mr. Bordop? What, should I do something else? What's going on? See, I don't want to hijack the 2 hours because everybody was waiting for this to happen. A bunch of people had actually expressed a bit of regret that this would be the final episode, that this would be the final chapter, so to speak. I thought it was kind of humorous. I'm sort of, you know, burnt out after doing, you know, this is usually my fourth show of the week that I've done for myself on the Ocelli Effect, going Monday through Thursday. Occasionally I show up on other shows and do other work as well. So generally speaking, I would have already done 4 shows, and immediately after what I do with Carmine on Thursdays, I would jump into this one and usually get pretty worn out. I know it sounds funny because, you know, it's just 4 hours of my life and all that, but when you have to intellectually engage with things for more than an hour or two and make sure that there's no dead air and sort of marshal a broadcast, I mean, it is it's a skill set, I imagine. And you know, are we here for the giggles of how awkward and silly this all is? I'm gonna go to the chat room. How about this? Let's see. So far, I'm just going to read some of the comments here. I'm going to go back a little bit. Let's see. The Greek is busy making perfect rice is one comment. And examining fecal matter. The Greek can't get on the call. He's trying, though. Comes from Greek's woman. Okay, cool. Let's see. Oh, I see. I have done both today and still made it on time. All right. Let's see. Greek call in, LOL. That's from Jan Matthew. Let's see. Greek forgot to call into his own call-in show. Let's see what else we got. Let's see. Or saw the pointlessness of it. LOL. Likely the latter. Was hoping he could address the legalities of homesteading. That's because Seth was, okay, well, you know, that's just rude to Seth. I'm not going to be rude to Seth. He's not a bad guy. Okay. Let's see. Oh, check that out.
Oh, yeah, virtual problems with a virtual system and a virtual limitation.
Well, after all, everything is virtually something or other, isn't it, Greek?
So it can be. Go ahead. Well, I mean,
Well, let me just continue. You settle down for a second. I always find this stuff funny, man. I can't help but laugh. So the Greek has actually joined in for Ocelli and the Greek. This is the final chapter. We still have enough time to get this done the way I see it, because there's plenty of time to say essentially the same thing that's been said over and over again. And as I said, this would be the 12th chapter of the reloaded version. There were 18 proper episodes of the first version, I think. And truthfully, there were a couple of other rogue episodes there that you could count. So somewhere near 40 episodes or so. I think 30 to 40, depending on how you look at it, because we did appear on, Jack Blood's stream at one point. We did a couple of little surprise things that were done unscheduled on AFR, plus the private show on my website. Which we did two of them, but only one of them was retained by the recording.
So about 80 hours of stuff, right? Roughly.
Yeah.
On average, 2 hours each.
Uh-huh. Yeah, roughly 80 hours is what'll be all told here all together. And, the way I see it is, pretty much the same stuff has been said over and over again.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, why not?
Repetition is not, I'm not being insulting by saying it was repetitious. I'm just.
Oh, no, no. Here's the thing. How can you move forward? You know, you've got to, it's like preheat, you got to get up to the right temperature. And, obviously this is not the society for it. Here's the thing, Chuck. Yeah. And it's easy to say objectively that the message or the reports that are done on the ONG, it's not for this society at large, period. Because 99% of what's discussed is the obvious, right? Speaking of the obvious, right, how do we start off by discussing what day it is, right? I mean, why is that even important? Go think about that, you know. If you're going to have to report back to the mothership, you have to be objective. You can't come to this planet and say, well, I like strawberry ice cream and this, that, and the other. You have to be objective. And when you objectify the condition, it's relatively foreign to the population at large, you know, relatively, meaning that, you know, if you say, you know, what's lawful timekeeping, do you know what day it is? You know, the first thing they do, whatever aspect of society, they're going to run to the Pope's work schedule, right? If you ask about, you know, all these things that we've discussed, they're pretty obvious points.
But I always love how people look at their wrist, even though they don't wear wristwatches and haven't for several years, still do that. I always appreciate that little pantomime myself.
Right. But you know, here's the other thing. There's uncommonradio.com. And that's basically a courtesy website. So if someone asks you have a site, you don't look unprepared. And there's just archives. Perhaps this the Greek sonic emanations and reports will continue, and that will be pretty much the hub, Uncommon Radio. AFR pretty much had a discussion with Danny, and you know he's like, just keep it going if you want. And I'm like, well, I don't know what I want at this point. You know, I think we have to do what we know, and that's the thing. People always do what they know, right? That's why nothing gets done. Anyway. There'll be more to come. It's just the thing is the things that are discussed are out of time and out of place at this point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just has no place in this society. But, you know, here's the thing. The topics and the way things are discussed and reported on is for the next society to come. Not a political society as people know it, and not as a when I say political, it means like everything is revolving around political notions and political conventions, right? This is a non-political society that's coming, meaning it will not be based on anything that other than being able to turn on a pot and boil water and throw a chicken or an egg in there or bake some bread, nothing will transfer over because it will be based on real materialism, real spirituality versus fake. What's that, right? You know, what's interesting is, when you have certain discussions, they say, well, that sounds spiritual or religious and I'm not that. Well, the people that are stuck in materialism don't even know anything about materialism. Because if the people that are materialistic were really so, wouldn't they complain about all their fluids being stored in flat bottom containers?
Yeah, you would think.
I say, wait a second, all fluid should be in an ovoid container. Why do we, right? Wouldn't they be calling their engineers and their academics and saying, why don't you design heating and cooling systems that make a rarefied rising cold and a densifying descending heat like it is in nature? So the ones that are saying that they're materialistic and the criticism of you hear people, oh, they're materialistic. No, they're not. Because how well versed are, have they mastered materialism to be dubbed materialists? So what does that mean? It's the opposite, right?
Right.
Everything
right.
is the opposite. When you go, you think you're going to get an education, you're being dumbed up. When you think you're going to a place to get health, you're being made unhealthy. When you think you're going to a place, you're going to learn about spirituality, you're going the opposite. Or you're learning actually about demonology. On and on and on and on. So everything is backwards. So you, how many times have you heard, again, people being dubbed materialistic? What do they know about the material world? Nothing. And are they paying attention at all? So that's what I mean. These reports are for the next society, because in the next society, if someone is dubbed as a materialist, they will be expert in that, you see. So anyway, now, can you say that people are expert at being dumb? I don't know. I think they're not really, you know, even though I call people morons and idiots, which is a technical term. They're really stubborn and rebellious is really what it is. And they're apathetic. So all the instruction, all the knowledge, all the imparting will not change until the stubbornness and the apathetic or apathy goes away. So that's how you top off a limited sonic series, right? Because whenever we get together, I always say everything should be limited. Everything should be packaged in a container somehow. Yeah, right? So, okay.
No, fair enough. I'm actually trying to drag someone into the conversation on Skype, so please continue.
Mm-hmm. All right, I can dummy load the audience for a few minutes, maybe. I don't know. Do you want to talk about what everybody else is talking about? Maybe. I don't know.
Well, why would we want to do that? I mean, after all, this is the final chapter here of this. You know, do you want to use up the time doing that?
Actually, it's really difficult to do that. But, you know, here's the thing. What people are not used to is having something explained clearly from the beginning and clearly showing an end. You never notice how things are not begun and ended neatly, right? So, you sound like John Bonham on the keyboard.
Yeah, sorry about that, but I'm trying to I said. Sorry.
So either way, So the thing is, you know, like for example, in classrooms, they have the children in there. I mean, anyway, and they ring the bell. Everybody gets up, goes to the next one. So anything maybe that isn't worth finishing isn't worth starting, right? So you've got to keep things. You know, construction projects have a start date and an end date. So the interesting thing about giving objective reports is that it's very unique and it's very, very simple. And anyone can see it, but it's just, again, the apathy and the rebelliousness and the stubbornness not to. And one interesting way to explain the condition of humanity is actually by reading the emails that get at Uncommon Radio by the people who are reaching out and saying, hey, you know, I want to just message you, you know, through the email. And if you read, like 99% of the emails are very well thought out and objective. It's not like, oh, I really like what you're saying. You know, none of that stuff. You know, it's just, hey, look, I heard the report on this. I checked it out. Holy crap. Right? Or what about, you mentioned this, but what about that? Right? Very, very objective, which sheds a positive light on the ability to get responses. In other words, it's a good thing to have a way for people to respond or communicate with through what's called email or call-ins if they want to call in. The Ocelli and the Greek Skype is down right now, so.
Right. I'm Hello. Doing my best to drag people in through my Skype. Yes, there you are.
Hi there. Nice.
I dragged you right into the conversation, so you're actually on the air with us. Just took me a minute because my Skype is muddy. Sorry about that.
No worries at all.
Mm-hmm. So, I know that you wanted to make sure that you added in a question or a comment to this show because you were reaching out earlier. So,
yes.
By all means, go right ahead.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to ask the Greek concerning some of the things that he's talked about regarding Christianity, what he calls Christianity, and how he's
what it's
been,
called.
How he's been critical of certain things, and talked about the questionability of certain things. And he's talked a lot about the translations as far as the King James not being a translation and certain things not being accurate. And I think that that's all been very well, but he hasn't really touched on the New Testament aspect of things. And he hasn't really expressed any thoughts or reports on things such as what they call salvation or accepting the work of Christ or having one's name written in the book of life, sort of the things that Christians believe are the things that actually get them to heaven or get them saved. And I wanted to know if he had any kind of report or opinion on things like that.
I believe I gave you an email on that, and I see you have a lot of fervor and zeal to have this discussed openly. And typically when I get together with Chuck, nothing personal, Chuck, but Chuck shuts down when we speak about scriptural stuff. I know. But that's why I like to keep it more general. And the scriptural stuff is misunderstood. Regarding Christianity at large, nothing that's discussed viably in Christianity is biblical. Zero. Now, in order to have a rational discussion, if 1% of Christianity was biblical, you'd have to grant it. To be rational, if it's 2%, 5%, or if one thing in Christianity was rational, you'd have to grant it. Otherwise, it sounds irrational to say nothing in Christianity is biblical, right? At least in a positive sense. There are a lot of things in the biblical text, both in the King James and in the original language of preservation, that condemn by description, not by name, what Christianity does and its believers and followers through their actions, right? So we have to establish that through research. You can't just take things as they're said. Now, you went through a few different points. There is no such thing as a New and Old Testament. It's all one contiguous document.
The reason I use that loosely.
Yes, that's fine. The whole thing about new and old, no, that is not in the scriptures. There's no part, there's nothing there that delineates that. That just like there aren't 66 books, there are 49 books. Mm-hmm. It was devised, books were devised and divided to create the 66 number because from a sort of an occult way, whenever you're addressing mankind by mankind, it's usually divisible by sixes, so they did that. Now, the other thing you said regarding salvation, I always bring this up actually for a decade to quote-unquote the born-again sect when they talk about being saved. Ask them, what are you being saved from? And they don't know, or they cannot give you a scriptural answer. The concept of salvation is very, 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 very simple. And it's been – now here's the other point. I'll get back to what you're being saved from, which these people that profess faith in this particular era don't know.
If they said condemnation, would that be accurate?
No. Well, condemnation would be execution of judgment in the sense as it's reared verbally before it's done. Condemnation, you see, that's another thing that it's like judging and condemning, right? Mm-hmm. Now you got to realize that like we started off earlier by discussing it's the obvious that we like to report on, right?
Right.
So what's obvious is when people talk about being saved, what are you being saved from? And they don't know. I've gotten answers like sin or things like that, and that's a behavior. How can you be saved from a behavior? That's like, you know, you got up in the middle of the night and you stubbed your big toe on a kitchen table. How are you going to be saved from that? It's done. That's not where you're being saved from, right? Because sin is not an issue until it's performed either, right? So you're not being saved.
Right.
So they don't – it's very simple. Now, the other thing I think you mentioned in one of the written correspondences is the writings of what's known as the disciple or apostle Shaul or Paul. Shaul would be the name of in preservation, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. More of an Aramaic. The reason why I don't discuss a lot of the points and the apologetics, apologize means to defend, of what they call the New Testament is because that is on a PhD level. like the Genesis and first third of the biblical text would be kindergarten to fifth grade, and then it would be fifth grade to eighth grade and through the Psalms, and then you get to the later prophets, which would be graduating from high school, and the New Testament would be bachelor's degree and PhD, and the, who they call the Apostle Paul is speaking on a PhD level. And if you've ever listened to the recordings that we've done here, I've always brought that in mind as a metaphor, where if you were to lecture a group of five-year-olds on astrophysics for an hour, they'll all be quiet. And after the hour, you ask them if they have any questions, and they all raise their hands, and the question is the same. Do you have any candy? Right? See?
Right.
So discussing – now, let's just boil it down. Let's just give it away. It's like the Greeks speaking in circles now. Why don't we just give it away? What you're being saved from is death. The entire biblical text is about – three things. It's about life, it's about death, and everything in between and after, which is the law. The law is how you deal with the environment. Right? Mm-hmm. I've asked people, what is law? And no one can answer. It's the simplest thing in the world. Right? Okay, so here's the thing. Who they call the Apostle Paul was writing about was to convince those that knew. Do you remember reading somewhere and they said the Christ, when he met some pagans, he says, I didn't come for you, I came for the lost ones of Israel, right?
Right, right.
Right? Okay, that's not what it says. If you go look in the original language, I didn't come for you, I came for the deceased, or those that are departed from Israel, meaning those that are dead. Because the people, he didn't come for those who didn't know what scripture means. People that knew the promises that were given to the original man and woman was that you're going to die, but it will not be a terminal condition. You will be subject to reincarnation or resurrection, meaning brought back. Right?
Right, right.
And this was a promise, and it went on and on for thousands of years. And the Christ came for one purpose only, was to show that when you die, what happens after you die? That you can't be brought back physically, right? And then mm-hmm. you have a new body, because you can choose in that reincarnated state to be physical or non-physical, right? This is discussed in many of the prophets as well. So,
I find this really interesting, because some of the readings that I've done of what I believe to be biblical text, okay, point to the idea that the Christ figure says that this is the new law, that he has actually come to bring the new law, that the old law is actually gone.
That's not what it says.
That's not what it says.
It says at some point that he is not trying to do away with the old law. Doesn't that?
Doesn't say that either.
Mm-hmm.
Because here, you ready? I'm going to drop this on both of you. The word law is not in there in scripture. It's the teaching.
Well, no, I understand that. But
No, it's different. The law is brought up in there as well. There are laws. But the teachings, and this is also what is different, is now what is the teaching that if you are no longer subject to death, it's a different set of rules than if you're subject to death.
That was going to be my point, is that if you're coming with a different teaching, right, you have a different set of laws, because
you're no longer
longer subject to the old system. Let's just describe it as the system. That's not the word used, but I mean, right or wrong.
Okay, hold on. I think you let's not miss the point here. Mm-hmm. What he said was irrelevant to those that don't know the purpose. In other words, if you read the prophets talk about, many will take interest in this, but it will be a stumbling block on them. What's a stumbling block? Something that makes you trip. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you study scripture, you will find out through the even the Christ after he was resurrected said, if you want to know who I am, you have to know what Moses said, the prophets, and the Psalms. That's why modern Christianity tells you don't read the Old Testament, read the New Testament, because here's the point. This is very, very simple. There are movies that have been done, like Men in Black, when he says, when you put on this suit, no one will be able to remember you. You'll be like some form of, whatever, deja vu or something, right? The most interesting quality of the biblical Christ, which is in the text, by the way, if you know how to read out of it, is that he was invisible. Not invisible, you know, you could see him in the room. But if he knocked on your door and came in right now where you are and sat with you and spoke with you for 3 hours and left, and someone asked you 5 minutes later, what did he look like? You'd say, well, you know, he looked like a man. Okay, what color was his hair? I think it was brown or black. Or how tall was he? I'm not sure. Right? He had this ability of invisibility. In other words, he mixed in with whoever was there. That's why when you see, when the people wanted to throw him over the cliff for what he was saying, how did he escape that? He just turned around and walked right through the crowd. Right?
Right.
When his mother asked him to do something, he says, if I do this, they'll know who I am. He was invisible. That's why he had spoken in the what's called the New Testament. He had directly engaged the Pharisees at least four times. And yet, when it came time to his arrest, they didn't know how to describe him to be arrested. So they had to hire Judas to betray him with a kiss.
Right.
Because even though they knew who he was when they heard him and looked at him, a minute later they could not recognize him. That's why he had to betray him with a kiss. To show, he says, show us who he is. So here's the interesting part. What you're being shown, this long-haired thing, whatever, nailed to a cross wearing a diaper, and this other stuff you see in movies where he looks real dirty, you know?
Yeah.
That is Serapis or Asclepius. Right? You go look up Serapis. The cult of Serapis. If you look at the cult of Asclepius, who was the god of health, have you ever heard Christians say, God bless you?
Yeah.
And not just after a sneeze, but like, oh, God bless you, goodbye, you know? That is a typical saying of the cult of Asclepius. It has nothing to do, you will not find that in scripture at all.
I've also heard that that character is some form of ascension master.
Here's the thing about all that. Is there is a fascination, and this is another thing to explain, and I never thought ONG would be a discussion of scripture, but let me make this point clear. About 90% of the emails I get at Uncommon Radio and before was regarding scripture. So there is a strong desire. As I said over a decade ago, you're going to see this topic coming up more and more as the future comes, but none of it will be accurate because the time to speak on this accurately is not now.
The desire is present, but the knowledge in inaccurate fashion is not.
Right. And it's not, and the knowledge is no special thing. You just have to do it. You just have to do the work. But the thing is, do you remember seeing photographs in the 1970s? People wore polyester bell bottoms and wide lapels and real tacky colors. Why did they do that? Because it aesthetically was pleasing? Hell no. The reason why they did it, because it was fashionable. Right now, it's still fashionable to be like the fox and the grapes. Oh, you know, who knows, what about scripture? Oh, yeah, who knows, blah, blah, blah. That's no good. My idea is better because no one is looking. Because if you look, you will be very unpopular. Now, here's the other thing regarding if you're approaching anything, even if it's the newspaper, and you're prepared to read into it what you think it's going to say, you will leave there pretty happy with any body of work, but you will get nothing out of it. Now, the entire civilization on the planet right now, when you approach any religion, has already been bombarded through Hollywood, which controls the mindset through audio and visual, and other conventions, literary and such. That whenever you bring up Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, or whatever, you have a preconceived notion through these other forms of media what this is. And when you start looking at the text that these things are allegedly subscribed to, you see certain key phrases, and you overlay all the stuff that was overlaid on you, which is false. So, in other words, when you say that, for example, I'm not putting you on the spot here because I do appreciate you're very well thought out, and I think we did correspond written on the email as well, is that you're bringing all the propaganda that's been going on for the past 1,800 years and trying to make it fit into something that it's not even out of. So you're trying to read into it instead of reading out of it, right?
Right, but I do feel like some of the way that you're describing it kind of does it does make it sound like this type, the knowledge, the true knowledge concerning what the biblical text is talking about is very esoteric, as if there's only a very small amount of people that could understand it within a very specialized form of studying it and context. And that kind of does feel like it does away with a large population of people that would subscribe to that belief.
Yeah, it does. Because you're being impressed. Don't be impressed by numbers. There's always been a very few people, always, on the planet. There's, as a matter of fact, you, if you do a little bit of research, you can find the number. It's very small. It's only four figures. Don't be impressed by quantity. The gods, like, you've heard me say, like, we don't know what a bear is, but we know enough of a bear that we can say we know what bears are. Because no one sat down and had a five-hour conversation with a bear. But we know they're, you know, they're furry and they're, you know, like this and like that and like this observation. So we don't know really who the gods are, but we have enough information from them that supposedly from them that we know about them, that one of the characteristics of the gods is anything they do, they do in great number when they create, right? Cells in the body, planets, stars, grains of sand on the beach, people. But even they tell you specifically there are certain qualities to look for. The plausibility go ahead.
No, well, what you just said about the fact that the that are not to be deceived by numbers, and that we don't exactly know who the gods are, but then what would you write off? Yeah, but would you write off the testimonies of people that have claimed to have firsthand experiences, as far as like revelations of heaven or hell, or there is the parable, for example, of Jesus talking about the rich man burning in hell, and then there would be people that say that, well, I went there too, and they've written books about it.
Well, that's an incorrect translation. That would be the lake of fire. That would be Gehenna.
Okay.
There is no heaven. No one goes to heaven and no one goes to hell. The word that is being used as hell is the grave. So everyone goes to the grave. And heaven, no one goes to heaven because heaven is coming here like it was during the flood and before the flood. Okay. Heaven is a realm. There are three of them. So yeah,
but
there is
contrast,
no heaven.
Some people say that they've been there. In contrast, some people.
Well, here's the. Yeah, sure. There, I've heard someone testify that he saw a demonic-looking figure come into the room, a very much Hollywood demonic-looking figure, and he called in the name of Jesus, and this long-haired, flowing thing came around and shooed the demon away. That's just two low-level entities having fun. So, in other words, there are low-level and entities, meaning like. Not elementals, because elementals are indifferent to mankind. These are like low-level angelic-type elementals that they're sitting at the bar and they're saying, man, we got so many people down here. I bet you that if I go out and show up as this Jesus Christ character that they see on TV and you show up as the devil character they see on TV, we're going to have a field day and this guy's going to fall for it. And they do that. The same thing with ghosts. Well, people see, you know, this house is haunted by a little girl that died here 100 years ago, and people see the little girl walking around on the second floor. That's one of these entities playing a joke on you, man. They know what's on TV. They know what iconography you have. They can't read your mind. You have to say it, you know. So anyway, and also there are other entities that plant dreams in the head while you're sleeping. So once you start, here's another thing I'm going to advise people on. Once you start studying reality, your dreaming stops. Or if they try to bring a dream on you, you might be like, hey, you know what? I ain't having it. And they go away. Because all benevolent gods or angels that send a dream to you, they identify themselves by name, why they're coming to you, and so on and so forth.
Doesn't it say something in the Bible similar to always test the spirits as far as making sure of who they are? So in that case, I guess they wouldn't always identify themselves. You'd have to inquire as to who they are to make sure that they're real.
But you also have to look at the conditions. Around 1960 years ago, all this was shut off. And anything that is until a time in the future, and any contact with the spiritual world from 1960 years until a time here coming in the near future is these malevolent entities. And malevolent entities always show themselves as being good or beneficial or just there. The scripture is very clear. Actually, I'll cite some of this. It says, if they say, here he is at the mountains, don't go. If they, here he is at the desert, don't go. It's not me. Right? How many, have you, remember that?
Okay. Yeah.
Until the time is set. So, So, you know, here, you know, if you want to learn about how these revelations work, go study some of the, quote unquote, Islamic reports on the jinn. I've personally met a woman who, when this topic came up, she froze and she says, listen, I really don't like talking about this, but it seems like you know about this. And she gave me a firsthand account of a family member who was actually captured by one of these djinn, you know, and she knew because I knew by the way I was speaking that I wouldn't be laughing at her, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, so. I definitely, I feel like there's validity in saying that you have these malevolent spirits that show up and prank people continuously.
Yeah. Very good. That's it.
But the idea that you have also an omnipresent, omnipotent God, let's call him, supreme being that can do whatever he wants and that he wouldn't intervene or take a step to himself to certain people.
Stop. Let's go back. Omnipresent. If scripture, just because something is a bit of information is very short, like a verse could be four words or three words strung together, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it's not important. I'll give you an example. Someone is on a cruise ship and they fall overboard and he says, help me, I'm drowning. Oh, what did he say? Oh, that was too short. Can't be important. Right?
So
when you say he's omnipresent and omnipotent, how does he do that? He tells you how he does that. He has another species that does that for him. There are species on that side. Have you ever heard of cherubim? They're pretty freakish looking. They have four wings and four faces, and right? Have you ever heard of angels? They appear. They don't have wings, by the way. They appear as men solely. Right. And then they have other angels that are elemental. And then there is a particular species or a type of heavenly creature that performs the duty of the omnipresence for the creator. And I'm not going to say who that is right now. It's not anthropomorphic. It is something that it's made up of seven things and it's one body part. I'll just give you a hint. You know, here's the thing.
What it is.
You know, they're called the seven eyes.
Mm.
And it looks like, imagine a creature that is made up of seven eyes, right? And look, here's the thing. I had a conversation recently with someone a few months ago recently, and he said, listen, I got time. I want to ask you a couple of questions. It'll be short. And 3 hours later, we're still on there, you know, because he was expecting really short, pat answers, you know, like, you know, everything that people try to discuss, you know, he thought he would hear again. And he interrupted and he says, man, you're bursting at the seams. You know, and I said, yeah, I am. I've got to hold back. That's why I think on this uncommon radio thing, and I'll just say it here, I'm going to do that ridiculous thing that everyone else is doing, a membership area where you just join, I guess, and you look at a menu of various topics as the ones that we are discussing right now openly.
Okay. Well, that sounds interesting.
The seven eyes are mentioned, but it's very short, right? But wait a second, Greek. That's too short to be important. Wait a second. You know?
Right.
In forensics, they could build a case based on a fiber that is microscopic, right?
Hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess in wrapping up this particular question, it feels a bit counterintuitive, this idea that, and I've always kind of wrestled with this, you have billions of people on the planet, a few more billion historically, and it just feels like this idea of them being as countless as sand and yet being completely disposable. And then you have this tiny group of people that somehow manage to access the truth. And those are the people that sort of pass the test or whatever.
You don't want to be one of those people, because if you're loved by the gods, you're hated by man. And if you're loved by man, you're hated by the gods. And they make your life a living hell, in quotation marks.
But don't the gods love men? Like, why set up a system that, you know, most people are not going to be able to pass the threshold?
Because
it just feels like a waste.
Because all the gods, all from the lowest to the highest, are malevolent to humanity right now. What I mean by malevolent is if any of them showed up as they are, you would disintegrate painfully. So they have to shield themselves. And their world is so dynamic that we cannot imagine the dynamics involved and the power involved. So they're all malevolent at the point that we're in right now. just like if you were a goldfish in a bowl, all the inhabitants in the apartment that the goldfish was sitting in are malevolent to you. Because all they have to do is reach in, pull you out of the goldfish, and set you on the coffee table, and you are gasping for water.
Right.
You cannot interface with them.
But if you're an all-powerful God, you can just turn yourself into a goldfish and interface with them. And that's what a lot of these testimonies are.
Exactly. And that's what's being done. But you have to look at the conditions. The Christ, by the way, if you read, from Genesis all the way to Revelation, except for Revelation, that was written and dictated to prophets by the Christ. That's why a litmus test to someone who says they know the Bible is very simple. Is that when Moses was speaking, you know, at the bush, who was he speaking to? And if they just say God in generic, they don't know. I mean, just keep walking because that's too generic. That was the Christ that he was speaking to.
Right.
Everything. The only dictation that is not from the Christ is the book of Revelation. It's very clear. It was from the Father to the Son to his servants. That's why if you don't fit that servant class, you will not, I assure you, if you are religious in any of the mainstream religions or offshoots, I assure you this, you will not understand anything in the book of Revelation at all, period, other than the word the, up and down, or white, or black, or red. You will not understand anything because it is not for the believers, it is for the servant. Like, give you an example. If you and I are roommates, and you believe I'm a roommate, and I believe you're a roommate, and you come home one day and ask me to wash your socks, I'll say, F you, man. But if I'm your servant and you come home and you say, wash my socks, Greek, I'll say, yes, sir, because that's the position I have. Most of the people on the planet today that are quote-unquote believers are giving lip service. There is no law, right? And they say, well, he's just love, but they forget that there's four or three different types of love. So, you know, the thing is, the time is coming. What's really exciting for everyone that's listening is starting around a year from now, there's going to be a more discrediting of current convention, which you are seeing. And I'll give you some – I've been saying this for over a decade, and what it's coming on right now. Like, for example, there's the whole thing about the media being discredited, even by the American political leader. There's discreditation about the medical society. Still has not become a discreditation of the legal society and the financial society somewhat. But what you will start seeing starting next year is a discreditation of all mainstream religions. And it's starting right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what will happen is that topic, any mainstream religion in topical nature at its core is about the gods or goddess, right? Otherwise it wouldn't be dubbed mainstream religion, because they all have some form of God. They've really messed up by what they're doing. They would have been better off representing, you know, like what Monsanto does or whatever, than what they're doing, because when you start misrepresenting the gods, as the mainstream religions are, all of them, and the minor ones, you are going to be in a little bit of trouble. So let me just bring this point up. In the future, perhaps within a decade, all of your religious people right now that are famous, you will run into them and they will deny ever being in that field.
Well, I mean, that TV evidence. I mean, that's kind of.
Yeah, but they will still. Or worse. Yeah. So,
okay.
And this is going to be an interesting time that's coming. And I always suggest that people, it doesn't matter if it's the human body, of any of the religious texts, politics, money, physics, water, anything, go to what's been memorialized about that topic, right?
Right. As far as
start there.
As far as this period that you're speaking of, how much validity would you place on the speakings and the writings of people like Anthony Patch, who talks about CERN and this idea that you have a portal that's going to be opened? And
No. Okay, hold on. This is what you're going to find out about CERN. Have you ever heard of a TV show called Pimp My Ride, where they take old car?
Yeah.
CERN is the Pimp My Ride for the physicists. They took all of the junk rubbish, mentally disturbed people, all the junk rubbish manufacturing processes, all the junk rubbish electrical theories and physical theories, and threw billions and gajillions or whatever it credits at it to build a model to show basically we have access to the credit system and you don't, sucker. Right? And we got spinning rims on this CERN and all this other stuff. And we got a pop-up 42-inch TV on the trunk. Look, don't fall for it. Now, I'm not going to say don't fall for it because I was going to do a Skype call with someone about a week ago and said, I only got 10 minutes because someone wants to watch a movie with me. I said, great, listen. When people sit down and want to watch a movie, I get the chair and I sit opposite of them and I watch them watching the movie. You learn a lot more because the movies, I mean, there hasn't been really any film worth watching because I know the Hollywood, it's basically stupid people making entertainment for more stupid people. Don't get sucked up into it. Anyway, and it's a harsh criticism, but I assure you it's pretty objective.
Or it could be people in the know making movies for stupid people hoping to dumb them down.
Well, yeah, it could be, but it's not. But, you know, and I don't want to be harsh. I don't want to go there right now, but watch what people do. So when you watch Pimp My Ride, watch people watching Pimp My Ride, how excited and how into it they are. Watch people that talk about CERN. They know nothing about physics. They know nothing about the money system. They know nothing about the gods or spiritual systems at all.
Well, you said in the past that a lot of knowledge is suppressed and that everything that was
allegedly
That was to be known about physics and science was known in the late 19th century.
Yes.
So if we're talking about institutions like CERN, wouldn't it stand to reason that that is a field where this suppressed knowledge is being used for their own private purposes?
No, because everything that was known was abandoned with the advent of Einstein around the 1920s or so. They abandoned everything for relativity and Walt Disney's electron and proton.
In the public, you mean, though?
And the private, too.
Well, we don't know.
Private would be university, but we don't know. Well, let me assure you of one thing. Do research a little bit on J.J. Thompson. In 1895, he showed that what you call weight and momentum is not in mass. That means that it doesn't matter if it's a lead brick or a feather. You have the illusion of them weighing different, not because of the material, but because of electrical lines of force that attach to it. And this was 1895. By the 1920s, there were elevating submarines at a rate of 10,000 meters per second, or 40 seconds for 10,000 meters. And they used submarines because they were already designed for the pressure they lost. That's why when you hear about those cigar-shaped UFOs, you can go to any of the Navy diagrams of submarines and identify it as a submarine without the propeller and the rudder. You could actually scale it. So in private, you're not being given anything, because decisions have been made around that time period in accordance with the cosmic censorship that was put on humanity that I've discussed that the gods put on humanity 2,500 years ago. So this
right, decisions were made, but that means that decisions were made in private by certain elites, right?
Yes. Well, aren't you one of the elites? Think about it.
In regard to the institutions of this world, I mean the elites.
Yeah. As but you know, people, the higher – The thing about what's going on, though, if you read what the gods have memorialized, the worst of men are put as leaders, right? They don't think – if you want to know what the gods think of you, look at who they put as your leaders. You don't vote anyone into public office or kingship, right? The gods put according to what they think of the society is what leader they fashion over you. Mm. So – they don't think, but here's the point. There was, if you study scripture and meditate on it, means keep thinking about it, you will find out that there's a conflict in the heavenly realm, right? Where one third of the spiritual beings sort of revolted, supposedly, the term is not really revolt, but have fallen away from the main, the main course of attitude and convention in that realm. They decided to pull themselves out and do other things. Okay, based on the creation.
Yeah,
and I can get into that in the second hour if you like. Otherwise, we'll see if you want to hold on.
Definitely.
Right, so we're going to go into the next hour, and obviously, if you think about who has been placed in leadership above the American people, well, I guess the gods don't think much of us. Anyway,
no, they don't.
Ocellian the Greek continues for the final chapter. Stay tuned to American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back.
I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology. They have all these great things that they're going to do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
What about show business? Showbiz is completely dishonest, corrupt, and full of shit, but in a nice way. Plenty of expensive drugs and perverted sex. You're going to be full of shit, might as well enjoy your work. Then you have the media. Not just the news media, let's include them all. The media are almost literally exploding with bullshit because they're located right at the crossroads of all the other bullshit. The media are made up of equal parts advertising, politics, business, public relations, and show business. These people are sitting right at bullshit junction. There's enough bullshit in the media for Texas to open a branch office. And you still have enough left over to start 2 law firms and a Christian bookstore.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Provide us for free education?
Well, that's obviously effective, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does.
Or they never censor, hang up, or cut off their guests?
Well, that's not fun, is it?
Oh, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shows and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are. We are. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio presents
the only broadcast information no other media outlet would dare to understand. The sonic entity known as Ocelli and the Freaks.
The second hour of the final chapter of Ocelli and the Greek begins here on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Of course, I am one half of that sonic entity. Chuck Ocelli is my name. Don't often say it during this show, but figured I'll throw it in just for the sake of noting it. So I am here with the Greek, and we've actually held over our caller who I didn't identify in the first hour at all. But, hey, we don't necessarily need to identify him, although I don't know, Greek. What do you think?
Oh, it's up to him. Go ahead and state your name and purpose if you like. Otherwise, we'll continue with the conversation.
Thanks. My name is Sam. I'm a guy calling from Sweden. Just recently came across the show maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and I'm a big fan of it. I'm sorry that this is the last episode.
And here's the thing. Like Sam, if you wish, you can join in via the convention of the phone at 218-339-8525. That is, again, I'll slow it down, 218-339-8525. I have control of the phone line. I also have control of the Skype because there was a little bit of a thing that went on here. Charles.Ocelli, spelled O-C-H-E-L-L-I, on Skype. If you send me a request that you want to join in or a message if you're already on my list, I will add you into the conversation as well. So there you go. This is the way you can join into the show, which was the difference when we reloaded it this time. We encouraged callers for every single show. To varying levels of success, Greek.
Yeah. Now, Charles, wait a second. Charles.Ocelli, man, that sounds like freaking royalty, man. What's up? But anyway, all right, okay.
That's okay. You know, my middle name makes it even worse. Okay. All right.
Yeah, we're just to finish up a thought. The conflict that there is now. Here's the point. It's very difficult to discuss this because you sound like a real nutter if you have imaginary friends, right? Now you sound even crazier if you start to discuss a civilization or a society that is intangible, other than the information that's been memorialized about them. Now, any information, by the way, when it's not understood, cannot be good, right? Now. Right, I think the Aesop's fables, the fox and the grapes, right? The fox can't get the grapes, so those grapes must be sour then. Right. And that's all the discussion you hear about anything, whether it's the money system, the body, the way the human body works in the medical system, any of the ancient texts, or anything. It can't be good. You know, we can't look there because we don't understand it. So that would mean that these things are memorialized in futility. And that's not what they are. The problem is that people want to read into them what they've been propagandized about before the fact of approaching the information. And they're trying to compare what they've been propagandized on with what's actually memorialized. And it's not a very good conversion. So they have to walk away saying, I don't understand legal documents. I don't understand medical documents. I don't understand this and that. It can't be any good because it's not just the television. It's been the pranking, and it's been what you might call social engineering, which has backfired. And we'll get back to the topic here. Those that knew, I've always said this with Chuck here. The difference between those that know and those that don't know, it's not like, hey, you know, you're in another room. You're in a different universe. The margin is so big that when the priesthood, by the way, when I say priesthood, those are the people that have, you know, knowledge in any society. They wear certain robes and depending on the culture. They had access to this information, and they noticed that the people didn't want it, and they started dividing themselves and saying these people are savages. And instead of taking the time and showing it to them, they separated themselves, and they called them the great unwashed, savages, sheeple, whatever, and they started looking at them as being repugnant and vile, which they are. I'm not saying that they're not now. Objectively, people are typically repugnant and vile as a group, a majority. But so the thing is not to make excuses for them because they're part of the creation. And when the creation changes, which it is, It will change as well. And those that are in the leadership positions are going to be in a little bit of hot water, in the hot seat, not because they're going to be directly offended through actionable causes, but because they will be ignored and put into irrelevancy. So with that interjected, the problem that is going on in the other realm, right, it sounds like crazy people now talking about the gods, is that if you read out of Scripture, you will see there is constantly a metaphor that is being given, and it's a contrast between the material, physical, flesh body and the spirit, the mind body, right? Mm-hmm. What's good, what the spirit wants is not for the body, and what the body wants is not good for the spirit, sometimes, not always, right? There's a lot of sayings regarding, good body, good mind, and all this other stuff. So the problem is that there was a debate to a certain extent about the creation on whether or not a spirit can be solely animated through physical means. And the call by a third of them was no, because if you animate the spirit through the physical means, it's subject to corruption, and also the spirit will take the material to a limit which could not be good. So you have to separate. And they said, no, let's do it, because it'll be the ultimate, let's say, combination for starting off a new way in the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing here to test the durability and the veracity of it, those third are said, okay, go mess with them then. You didn't want this to happen. It happened. It's been created. So go ahead and put them through a torture test. Just like, for example, when manufacturers build a car, they crash test it. They put it in a room and they put high pressure water on it for 3 days in a row to simulate, 10 years of rain, right? You've seen, right? That kind of stuff where they put product like certain laboratories, right?
Right.
So we're being tested by these malevolent spirits, but not overtly. Now, this was done overtly during the flood. If you read the book of Job, he talks – have you ever heard of the term the Anaf? It's a Hebrew term, which is the dark cloud, or the cloud, I believe, in the King James is mentioned as that. Well, if you look at that – have you seen the film – I hate to make film references, but this is – how
that's
people
okay.
communicate these days, Independence Day, where this cloud and the big ship comes down and there's this dark cloud that appears,
Yeah.
Okay. What people fail to recall or read out of Scripture is the mothership, okay, was still visible by mankind up until the flood. What mothership is that? Can I just throw in a few extra little tidbits here?
Sure.
Have you ever heard of something called the Garden of Eden? Where does it say in Scripture that was on the earth? Nowhere, because it was not on the earth. It was on the mothership. And even though the rivers flowed out of it, guess what? When the mothership left, I'm using the term mothership, so did the Garden of Eden. And all these idiots today are still saying, oh, the Garden of Eden's in Africa. The Garden of Eden's in Alaska. The Garden of Eden's here. But what are you talking about? Where are you getting this stuff from? Are you reading here's the other point. If you use a phrase or a term or a subject that is taken out of a body of work where that is defined in that body of work, you have no right, no freedom, and no license to redefine it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you read something, let's say, for example, Lucifer or Garden of Eden or this or that, where those terms originate in the biblical text and they're defined there as well. You can't take a term, let's say a medical term like nephrology, and define it as, a form of making ice cream. No, because it's defined within the body that you got it from, right? So what's going on is people are grabbing these catchphrases and they're leaving the definitions that are right, in the same text, and they're redefining it. And you're not allowed to do that. That's completely corrupt, unless you find corruption to be allowable, which it seems to be. Allows this type of stuff to go on and promotes it. So you have a situation here where the current existence is so different than anything that you read about, let's say, scripturally, that it's hard to reconcile, right? The thought of what you see as reality today with what was going on back then. The other thing that's difficult is you've all been propagandized to the point that change takes millions and billions of years, where certain changes can happen very rapidly. Like, for example, petrified trees. You know, when a tree dies, it falls over within 5 years. So if a tree is petrified in a vertical state, that means that process happened in less than 5 years or began to happen, right? So, you know, things like the Grand Canyon took millions of years. No, they didn't. There's something called cavitation, right? So there are many of these processes. I'm not saying that there's a Christian thing that says the earth is 6,000 years old. Nowhere does it say that in Scripture. It clearly states that there was a remodeling that started about 13,000 years ago. Now, even in secular bullshit science, they tell you that in many across the board, they say that it appears to have been a solar system-wide catastrophe around 13,000 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So there's many. So the thing is, are we reading? Are we really looking at things? Are we really reading out of them, or are we reading into them? And it's really the second part. So I the questions that you brought up. So if you were to leave, let's just sum up what you've asked. If you ask anyone what they're being saved from, they don't know. And if you go to Scripture, it's very clear that you're being saved from being in the grave or dead, because being dead is a state of like being asleep. Rest in peace. Mm-hmm. The cemetery is the Greek word kimitirion, which literally means a place where you go to sleep without dreaming, right? So you're going to be now. A lot of times people are confused by what I say because they're not listening. Is it Greek? You believe in reincarnation? I said, well, not as it's being discussed, but yes, of course, it's for sure. Everyone will be reincarnated or resurrected, absolutely. If the information is validatable and correct, right?
Right.
But no one has been yet, except for one, the prototype. Right. Now, here's the interesting thing. You have a lot of people also discussing the legend of the flood, the legend of the Christ, the legend of this, the legend of that in every society outside of whatever religion. Of course, when you have, let's say, a Christ-type figure in Egyptology and a Christ-type figure in Hinduism and a Christ-type figure, you know, east, west, north, south, what does that tell you? That there was an oral tradition that came because came down because everyone came from the same source, right? Just you see this all the time in the military. You can have like a bunch of guys in a platoon, and after the war they separate and they live all over the country. They're still going to tell the story that of their experience when they were all together. Even now, let's say they're all over the country, different parts of the world, right? But they still tell the same story, don't they? Because it originated in same spot. So when you hear about people saying, oh, well, that Christ thing, you know, that was also in Egypt, that's Osiris, and that's this and that. And I was like, yeah, of course. All that does is proves that we all had the same origin. And as everyone expanded and traveled away, it was kept, you know, these stories or accounts were kept. Yeah, that's all it does.
Hmm.
Right? You see, this is very – but the thing is, who's going to speak rationally and report rationally on these things when it's not fashionable? Right now it's fashionable to be Christian, by the way, still. You see rappers on stage wearing crucifixes, right? It's a fashion statement, right? So, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and there is no crucifix. The joke is on – you know, there's no crucifixion in the biblical text, even though the Greek word stavros is translated as crucifix. If you look up the etymological term of crucifix, it's a botanical term that has to do with botany, a flower blossoming in springtime.
Mm.
Anyway, it's very clear that the Christ was he was executed according to the law of Moses, right? It's very clear. Pontius Pilate knew the law. He says, I'm handing him back to you to use your law. What law did the Judean authorities use? Roman crucifixion, or did they use the law of Moses? What's the method of public what's the method of execution in the biblical text? It's death by stoning. But high crimes, you were to be stoned where you're nailed to a tree. Now, what was the Christ accused of? What's the highest crime in the law of Moses? Blasphemy, isn't it?
Right.
That's the highest crime.
Mm.
And you know, there's the whole thing, it's all just one big fraud. But here's the thing. if you have an audience, you better accommodate them, because you know what happens if you're not accommodating the audience? They dismantle. They just go somewhere else where they will be accommodated, right? In business, that's called an opportunity loss.
What? Yeah, well, I can understand that in the case of these like big mainstream outlets that are clearly doing it for their own gain.
No, even the you go to the smallest little Bible study in someone's house, they're still pontificating the same rubbish. Mm. They're even worse. The little groups are like little Hitler, little dictators, I shouldn't say. They're the worst form of terror would be go study scripture and go to a little Bible study or a small church and watch what you want to see what evil means. And talk to them about it.
I sort of get the image of Westboro Baptist Church at that point, which kind of to a different extreme, I feel. But
just military loves the Baptists, by the way, because they're the easiest to convert over to certain satanic rituals. But anyway, go ahead.
You'd spoken about cosmic censorship.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask, you'd also mentioned that you had these knowledge depositories in the past, like the Library of Alexandria, that they were destroyed.
All of them, all over the world, not just there, yeah.
But what would you say about current day depositories such as the Vatican libraries or alleged satanic archives that exist in hidden mansions somewhere?
Okay, let me just throw this one thing in. This entire world is ruled by the god of this world, which is the adversary, known as Ha-Satan, which means the adversary, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has a name, and I'm not going to use the name, and it's in Genesis if you look at it, and they translate it as serpent. There, you know how they show you, by the way, in iconography, they have a naked man and a naked woman and an apple tree and a snake?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a man or a woman's name, Robin or Hawk, or does that mean that they're a bird? Because a robin could be male or female, right? A man or a woman. If I said to you I met someone named Robin, would you think of a bird or, so I said someone, right? No. So why are they translating it as serpent when it's actually someone's name? It was an anthropomorphic. It looked just like anybody else. So this is Satan's world. So all of the universities, all of the religions, all of your sciences, all of that are his. And it's based on deception. So the Vatican, where you're saying all about these depositories now, they're nothing more than a byproduct. Have you ever seen a film called Idiocracy, which is supposed to be 500 years into the future, let's say, or 300 years into the future? What kind of depository would they have? Does it matter? Here's the thing. Whatever depositories of information exist right now are safe, and they don't even have to be secret because the people don't want to take the time to understand them. There's two ways to hide something. One is to hide it physically, or you spend 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 generations dumbing up people to the point where you could leave it out in plain sight and they won't understand it. That's another way to keep a secret.
Right. You've spoken in the past also about the goddess religions.
Yes.
As somebody who wants to look into that further, do you know of any reference material or books or sources that one can turn to for that?
On the internet, no, but you would, what I would suggest, this is what I would suggest. Go to a university library and ask where this information can be in a non-textbook form, right? In other words, for example, if you go to the Southwest of America, that's typically a snowbird type town. So when it's cold and snowy in the Northeast of America, people of high net worth or wealthy go and spend their winters in warmer places. And when they die, they might have a library and they bequeath it to a university and, books from the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries. And when these things are bequeathed and held in the university library, they are no longer read by people who are students and professors because it's not popular. They don't even understand it. So you want to find things that were written in the 19th century particularly. 20th century, there was a big clampdown on information and book burnings and things like that. But what you will do is, in your travels, you will find your own ways of researching the goddess religion. The easiest way to research anything is to be objective in your own surroundings. look at the logos and look at the justice system, which personifies that, and start looking at the history of those things, and then you will find something and some more commentary. Can I give you specifics, right? In the future, perhaps, I will get some authors and books, but you won't, they're going to be kind of difficult to find. There used to be, a site called Scribd, Scribd or S-C-R-I-B-D that people scan a lot of stuff in, but they're hard to find on a search because they're not named. It'll just be like a code. So that would be a good place to start. Much written about, ancient culture, especially what's called, you know, the Chaldean Hebrew culture. And if you study the history of these cultures, you will see the topic evoked quite a bit, you know, like Astarte and on and on and on, the Egyptian culture and all that, right? And the Greek culture, right?
Okay.
And then you will see how it branched off. Yeah.
All right, cool.
But essentially, not all goddesses are malevolent, but the ones that are instilled in the culture now are, for sure. And what makes them malevolent is that they are anti-life. Now, if you don't think anti-life is malevolent, then, you know, I don't know how else to find a common ground for discussion. You see, some people may think that anti-life is not malevolent, right? I mean, you might, you know, run into that.
Yeah, I'm going to bow out, but I do just want to leave with two questions that I'll try to make them as brief as possible. Would you be able to share some your opinions or whatever reports you have on George Soros? He's a name that's brought up a lot in the media as being somebody that orchestrates this and that politically.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is, what are your thoughts on Marvel, the corporation that puts out all these superhero movies? Because it seems as if a lot of stuff, that a lot of these big movies have a lot of code and a lot of supernatural
references. Not really. Well, here's any code needs a primer to be deciphered. Let's go backwards. Marvel would be something. Are you familiar with the Persian or religion called Zoroism or Zarathustraism? Say that fast twice, you'll get a hernia, right? Zoroism, look it up. It's a religion out of Persia. And what they taught was that man will be saved by someone of superhuman qualities coming out of society. That's where you get the superheroes and the super quality stuff. That's Zoroism out of Persia. That's all it is, right? The Marvel and the superhero, Superman, Batman, Superdog, Wonder Woman, that's all Zoroism. Go study Zoroism and you'll see what I'm talking about. George Soros seems to just be a contemporary Henry Morgenthau, or a contemporary, you know, Morgenthau was someone who heavily influenced FDR. Every time there is a dynamic political condition, there is always some kind of a mogul behind the scenes that is pushing and instigating in being the deal maker for these political things, because ultimately you will find out that what you're calling political or the status of governments or sovereign nations are actually corporate entities. And any corporate entity engaging in any form of business needs a negotiator, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when you look at what they call that television show they call the news, when they let's talk about the United States real quick. When they want to make a decision on policy, they don't say it's lawful or unlawful. They say it doesn't suit the best interests of the United States. It's just like when Ford cancels a particular model car. Why did you cancel it? Because it wasn't in Ford's best interest to continue manufacturing it. You'll never hear lawful and unlawful. It's always what's in our best interest. And every corporate entity needs a hardcore, hardline negotiator in the background. And that's all he is. And these guys have appeared over and over in every piece of history. They're handlers and they're negotiators. I can only objectify it.
Okay.
You see?
Last question, actually. One thing just came to mind. You've spoken previously about the relationship between the U.S. and the U.K. And I've heard people refer to that before as a sort of special relationship, and that, you know, some people say that the U.S. is just a colony still. What are your thoughts on that? And if that is the case, how can it then really be a superpower, or does the U.K. still run things?
No, it's a time of confusion. 20th century is the time when the pot's ready to be poured out, you know. The U.K. is an interesting thing. So is the U.S. And all these things are not easily answered. No, but I wouldn't say it's a colony, but I would say that 200 and some odd years ago, a group of subjects decided to be poor subjects and take action against their masters. And then what comes after that? So. But I have touched on this on describing how all functions are based on law, right? And if you look at your law system in the U.S. or the U.K., it's the same organization. So what is nothing much has changed. And also, don't look at the type of government, but look at the type of religious body that's operating. Whenever you have, for example, a revolution in a country, they might topple and change the type of governmental system, but the type of religion is still there. So now you know where the stability is, right? It's the quote-unquote houses of worship, and that are the real government, right?
Cool. Well, yeah, I think I got a lot of my questions out, and I thank you guys for taking the time to answer them, Greek primarily.
Okay, that's fine. And also, if I did a membership area and put you on the spot on Uncommon Radio, would you join?
Absolutely. I'd join that day.
Okay, interesting. All right, I'm just taking a little bit of a poll on that. It's not that I find it distasteful. I just find that if a membership area can thrive, then it'll be a give and take situation. Then I could say, hey, look, there's 5 or 10 or 100 members. I'm going to go and do some work, and I feel like it's being, you know, focused on, right? And I could write papers and do audios and things that are very specific to, right? So I'm just taking an open poll on that. Sorry, Chuck. I just wanted to see what people thought.
Don't apologize to me. It's fine.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, why not write a book? You were asking about your next project.
Well, I always I run into people in public say we should write a book. I'm saying, well, I wouldn't mind doing that, but you know, if I'm going to write a book and put it out there, I'm presuming that people know how to read, right? But with comprehension, I'm not talking about being functionally literate, where you know what the letter A, you know how to say D-O-G, or you know how to say N-I-C-E, but you don't know what it means. I mean, if you start – give you an example. I had spoken to an author a while back I met, and he says, I want you to read the book. So he gave it to me in an e-form. And even in the first chapter, I said, wait a second. You're using these words incorrectly. They're not – that's not what they mean. He says, it doesn't matter, Greek. Just read the book. I'm like, whoa, okay, so the thing is just to buy the book and read it and without comprehension. This is the author himself telling me this, by the way. So, you know, that's why I find it. And the last thing you want to do is write a book about a book.
Right.
So I think, have you heard me mention in the past that all libraries, you read material, even at home or in your own personal space by yourself, you read, all reading was done out loud. Right? Mm-hmm. It was not done silently. Now they're promoting, well, for the past few hundred years. See, if you went to an ancient library, like you brought up Library of Alexandria, you would pick up your reading material and there would be hundreds of small booths and larger booths. If it was a longer piece of material, it was the birth of the conference room. It would be passed around between person and person. So you would walk into an ancient library and there would be this vibration and this murmur of everyone speaking individually in these little booths, you know? Nothing was read silently. Everything was read out loud. This is a new thing to be silently reading. That's why I suggest people get audiobooks, because it satisfies that. And also, when you have the written word spoken, it has a different effect on the mind. Right? Mm-hmm. There's a frequency there. In other words, if you go to a modern-day library and lean up against, put the hand on the wall, it feels like you're in the morgue. If you went to an ancient library and you put the hand on the wall and leaned on it, it would be vibrating, literally. From all of the hundreds of mouths speaking. Completely different. If you look at the ancient temple structures, accurate depictions, they had hundreds of little booths, little conference rooms from the individual one all the way up to, you know, 5, 10, 15 people sitting in an area. And they would close them off as best as they could, and everything would be spoken out loud.
Right.
And there were no secrets that way. Like, for example, let me just say one more thing. The people that have been duped in modern democracy is that they told it go vote in secret. They don't understand that when you do that, you're explicitly implying that now the government can keep secrets. And a lawful government does not have secrets. A lawful government is there to serve its function and be open. So now you go and cast your secret vote, and now you're going to complain about secret agencies and secret spies and secret this and secret that and all these things. It's kind of twisted. All the ancient, the lawful societies did not do things in secret. It was open. Everyone knew what was going on. And what, yeah. So, not all of them, but I'm just saying.
Right. Sort of piggybacking off the this membership idea that you spoke of, would you be open to doing like one-on-one Skype sessions with people that had more questions?
Sure, sure. I would suggest probably doing a once-a-week group or something, you know.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Or the emails are great. You know, the we'll let that somehow I'll put up all that information on the Uncommon Radio. And the thing is with and I appreciate it. And also, can you tell us just real quick before you go how you came about across Ocelli and the Greek?
Well, I heard you on Freeman TV. What's it called?
Okay.
Flyby, whatever. The audio podcast.
Okay.
So I figured that particular episode was really interesting, and I'd try and figure out more about the guy who was being interviewed.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Well, let people know if you think people of good character are interested in being objective. I think Uncommon Radio or listening to Greek speak, and you might have heard me say, I wish there was other people saying this so that I could take a break. I'm not a public person or public. Mm. You know, I just think that these things need to be discussed openly.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, thank you guys for letting me call in. It's been good.
Great. Well, thanks. Thank you for coming. And Chuck dropped off. Maybe we'll have him back in a moment.
All right. Cool.
Okay. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, too. Bye then. You too.
And in the meantime, until Chuck comes back, we get a little bit of Greek speak. I appreciate you calling in, Sam. And we're probably discussing things at length that normally I would avoid discussing only because this topic – as whoever is listening now still will acknowledge that everyone has got an opinion on it, and typically it's a very sour topic, and you can't blame people for discussing, you know, saying, oh, that sounds religious, because what has happened is the mainstream religions or not so mainstream religions have left such a bad taste in anyone trying to objectify reality. That anything that even comes close to that topic is rejected. The same with legalese, for example. Why is it that the majority of people on the planet right now regard to what's called an attorney as liars and deceivers, but yet when it comes to discussing something legal, they don't want to, but they hold them in a negative light? It's like, why let it sit there and fester? Why don't you address it? You know, at least intellectually, you know, if the population at large just finds the legal society or the actors in the legal society distasteful, why don't they spend a little bit of time studying what's been memorialized about them, right? So they can maybe double check and see if they're doing their job right, so they don't have to despise them. You know, there was someone I had a discussion with. Who had a discussion with someone at the Sturgis, I think it's the get together with the Harley Davidsons once a year. And there was a politician speaking there, and someone, you know, after the politician was speaking, I believe it was a senator, someone approached him and says, hey, you know, you're not following the rules in any of your, you know, committees or hearings or constitution or anything. And the reply of the senator was, well, we're going to keep doing what we're doing until you stop us. Right? The same thing is with the medical society. The people just don't want to discuss how the medical society functions. They just want to discuss how they have interacted with them and what kind of sympathy they want to get. So what's interesting, why am I saying this, is because in the near future, there's going to be a little bit of sanity or health regarding these subjects where people will actually invest a little bit of time and see what these things really are, at least from what's been memorialized about them. Now, there are – this sounds really interesting, but actually might sound distasteful, but most people hate knowledge. Most people hate the truth. I've actually had people say to me, hey, man, I don't need to get anything from a book. I don't need a book. Well, forget about a book. It doesn't have to be a book. It can be just something reported. Could it be audio? Could be a DVD. It could be something scribbled on a bathroom wall. But why not? I think it might be they're afraid of consistency in places that they don't expect it. Think about that for a moment. Could it be that people are just happy about inconsistency in most cases because it makes them feel better? So either way, there's a lot of fat to chew. There's many things to discuss. Excuse me. There's topics that need to be examined. You hear the term, researcher or research. Well, that means to go and search again. Why bother researching when it hasn't been searched out the first time at all anyway? So I think there's going to be some searching that's going to begin. Now, the reason I say this is because this is a time period now that is ending roughly this 7-year cycle, and another 7-year cycle is going to be starting in what you call 2018, around that time in the spring. And by the way, just speaking of springtime, this is a time of seasonal change. And just to maybe throw something in, this is an interesting year. It appears to be intercalary, an extra month, meaning it's the middle of the 13th moon or month right now. But it is a seasonal change. So parts of the world will be going into winter, and the more dominating part will be going into summer or spring. And the interesting thing to consider about that is how do we define those seasons? So, and what happens during those seasons and the seasonal change. So, either way, we'll see if Chuck comes back. Danny, I'm going to take a pause here for about 30 seconds. I'll be right back. We're going to have a little bit of dead air. Sorry, folks. I'll be right back. Okay, sorry about the dead air, folks. And until Chuck comes back, if he does, this is the final installment of the Reloaded Ocelli and the Greek. Episode 12, or chapter 12, as Chuck has dubbed it. And the reason why is perhaps that putting a limitation or a sense of construct behind any event, whether it be, I guess, like I said, any event, this is a sonic event, a series of, and they're roughly 24 hours, 2 hours apiece of archived information that could be found on American Freedom Radio or uncommonradio.com. And also, Chuck has diligently, I think, had somehow recorded them on his what they call Ocelli.com website and various YouTube places. And I do encourage anyone who is seeking objectivity, although it is not fashionable at the moment, might want to inquire. The whole thing about giving inquiry or having inquiry is, are you prepared to just leave aside anything that is you might consider prejudicial, instilled within your personal belief, your opinion, let's say? Are you willing to put that aside and just see what can be commonly seen by anyone yet is refused to be done so? It's very simple. There's a concept called fashion, you know, like being fashionably late or being fashionable, whether it's with how things are said, how you wear clothes or whatever. The fashion has become more than just how we use the term. It is also the word fashion could mean to assemble something and put something together. And when it is, if you can discern the culture, and when it is fashionable or acceptable to be ignorant or to be opinionated, but you don't really have your own opinion. You really have to go along with the opinion that has been formed. I think it's called politically correct. And by the way, folks, growing up in the 60s and 70s, we were being told that, you know, America is a type of place where you can be yourself. And somehow that's promoted now, but in a perverted way. But be yourself, do what you want or whatever. But what's interesting is when you were back then and even now, encountering any of the quote unquote authority type figures, whether it's the legal society, medical society, or religious society, in private, the authoritative figures always said you have to be like everyone else. Yet publicly, you're being told to expand yourself, be you, be creative, be unique. But in private, with vehement authority, you're being told to be like everyone else. So there is a dichotomy here and a mixed message, I think, that is not helpful or sane for the individual. In other words, what is expressed through fashion and through the culture and what is popular at large, you will find that even though it might be fashionable to be one way, when you're in a more of a private setting, albeit considered public as well, in some cases, like a court or interacting with police or a medical practitioner or religious practitioner, they will tell you, you have to be like everyone else. And so on an expansive point of view, it's that you can express your individuality. I think that's a setup. I think you're being pranked. You know, there's a concept of freedom. There's a concept of license to be yourself. There's a concept of what you might have rights. And by the way, folks, just to throw this in, these concepts, by the way, you know, it's part of the prank, but just to throw this in, regarding rights, in order for rights to be instilled, there has to be an establishment of a crime that has been committed. Because in law, there are no rights. You have, pretty much, you're at large, you're what's called free to an extent. But once a crime has been committed and alleged and you're suspected of it, you go under what's called rights now. So when people are, it's kind of backwards, think of it. When you're claiming that you have some bestowed rights or inalienable rights or unalienable rights or whatever, however they want to fashion it again, there has to be some kind of misdeed that's been committed in order for those rights to kick in. So I don't know if it's just myself or how people have twisted that perception, but a little bit of more homework needs to be done on that. Because typically when people say they're going to stand up for their rights, I usually say, well, if they're fixing the bust people that day, it might be best that you just stay sitting down. So anyway, be objective, be perceptive, and you don't need to go to any kind of specialized source or specialized, again, source or place to be objective. You have to start with what's in 5 feet or 2 meters reach of you. Are you paying attention to what's going on around you? And the other thing is always you have to understand the concept of centrality. Where do things start from? And with mankind, if you're listening, and you're a sentient being, you probably have a physical body. You really need to learn how the body really works and what it really is, and put aside what the medical community has put on society through the media and all the other forms that they do have. Because if you are deceived about how the body works, and the body is headquarters for the physical and the spiritual side. If headquarters is deceived, and anything that comes out of it or goes into it in a resonant way will be deception. So try to understand and comprehend how the body works. The medical society at large, whether it's academic or in practice, they have done a tremendous amount of what I call grunt work or field work in establishing certain aspects of what the human body is. But you also have to keep in mind that that is nothing more than an accumulation of battlefield medicine. If you do even cursory research, you will find that the medical system at large today is based on roughly something that started less than 100 years ago, as if anything prior to that has been discarded for some reason. There's a banking aspect, of course, to this. This might sound like conspirology of some sort. But get a grip on the central location known as you, who you are. And basically, you're a mind that's being animated through a physical form, and the mind also means the spirit. So learn how the body works. Instead of just saying it in general terms, find out how your intake affects you, your what you drink, what you eat, and how the body itself affects you. You notice when if you don't get enough sleep, you don't feel well, and if you get too much sleep, you don't feel well. What is sleep? You know, what is food? You know, when you have an injury, how is it treated? You know, in ancient Greece, they discussed that the fluids in the body move in a wave pattern, in one general flow, and that was discarded as being nonsense. What they were not discussing the blood; they were discussing the lymphatic system. So the question here is, what do you know about the lymphatic system? Could it be that there's more lymphatic fluid in the body than there is blood? That's more than a could it be. The answer to that would be yes. So what do you know about the lymphatic system? You ever notice how when you bump a part of the body, the head, the elbow or something, your first desire is to grab it and squeeze it? Interesting, right? Okay, so start learning a little bit about lymphology or lymphatics and what that is. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of information on that, but whatever you can get on it, it would be a good place to start. Understand what a biological vacuum is. You know, could it be that the body is under a slight negative pressure? Right? It's sucking, not pushing. You know, well, what can you do with that? You know, how can you understand a little bit more about that? You know, I believe that Chuck and I have wrestled this discussion back and forth on the original Ocelli in the Greek. It was the container, episode 2, I believe. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because the simple point is this. If you are deceived about how the body works and the body is headquarters, what if headquarters is deceived, then what can come out and go in? More deception. So that is an interesting place or an interesting way to objectify it. You know, could you imagine going to a car mechanic and explaining what you'd like done, and before you leave the car with him, he asks you where the steering wheel is? How confident are you? But why is everyone confident, apparently confident, that the body is just a meat bag with blood in it and pressure, and it's warm? That sounds like a pretty piss poor evaluation of what's going on. So anything you could learn about how the body really works is going to be a really good place to start objectifying what is going on around you, and then objectifying what is going on within the room that you're in, just the room that you're sitting in. You know, why is it that you have a hot head and cold feet all year round, all indoors, when outside it seems like the heat descends and the cold rises? If you look at the mountaintops and the valley, you know, in contrast, why is it that your head should be cool and your feet should be warm versus a hot head and cold feet? But yet there are these contrasts that are going on, and there's a difference here between things that are alive and things that are not alive. You know, there's an interesting thing that Wilhelm Reich discussed, and it was armoring, emotional armoring, and how if you go to the academics or the leaders of convention and you bring up anything that has to do with the life force, they get very agitated. It seems like any convention does not want to discuss the life force or where things come from. If you go to a banker, ask him, where are they getting the money to lend to you from, where they have to show it by law? And they get very, very uncomfortable. Why? You see, ask anyone in any of the religious establishments, where are they getting what they're saying? And watch how uncomfortable they get. Right? Why? Why is that? Why is that humanity right now is at a state where if you start discussing source aspects or source causes, they get very uncomfortable? Think about it, because, well, if you were to objectify it, then you might actually become uncomfortable as well. And it's probably more comfortable to be fashionable in being uncomfortable, if that makes any sense. So this is a very difficult path to pursue, but it's what I should say is very simple but not easy. And I would encourage anyone, especially the young people, to start being objective. But in a mature way, because there's always the immature aspect of a little child. You know, when he asks you why, you tell him, and they ask why again, and they tell them, and they ask why, and they keep going. Do it in a mature way, but the whys should never end. sort of questioning the answers and maybe asking the answer instead of asking the question. So wrapping this up sort of as the 12th chapter, as Chuck has dubbed it. Now, ironically, the Greek was not around for the beginning, and Chuck may not be around for the end of the episode or the chapter. So there's a little bit of irony there. Maybe the first will be last and the last will be first. But all I can say is I encourage people that do find the information that has been imparted by the Greek or what can be dubbed as Greek speak to do more than just tickle their ear. In other words, as a fanciful sonic thing. And if it actually is thought provoking, which by the way, thinking can get you in a lot of trouble, so you have to be careful when and how you do that. But if it is thought provoking in that there are other ways, and you don't have to be running around discussing Freudian terms like boredom and, well, it's not boredom, it's Freudian, or depression and ego and things like that, where you can actually start putting things in terms that are practical and viable. Basically, don't be a Muppet. Don't be a puppet, in essence. You know, you're a man or a woman. You are... Or a young man or a young woman, you are who you are when you discover how to be objective. You will see that these things that have been thrust upon, you know, let's say the individual or the man or the woman, young or old, are not necessarily so. And there's nothing really wrong with it because you're not going to change it. So the moral here is to set yourself apart. Be objective, set yourself apart from it. This is very common, by the way, when you look at people in the emergency fields, when they approach to render their services, they are cool as a cucumber, as they say, and try to objectify things. It doesn't mean do it in a robotic sense, but be methodical, be clear, and be objective. And you have to also be able to discern and read the fashions that are at large in society right now. I'm using that word a lot tonight, at large, which just means prevalent and not necessarily under control. So this being the last episode, I want to end chapter. I want to thank Chuck for putting up with the Greek for all this time. I'm sure if he didn't enjoy it, he wouldn't do it. But Chuck has, I think, put himself out to do this collaborative project, as we said, roughly 80 hours on the web, because most of the things that he has spent his radio career on, which he is very good at, by the way, and he is a true professional in that field, I would suggest he has, and here he is. I was just thanking Mr. Chuck Ocelli for putting up with the Greek for about 80 hours.
Yeah, so, well, apparently the Skype didn't want to cooperate there. I don't know. Yeah. I'm speechless, but
no, that's fine. And so was I. That's why I basically recapped and told people be objective and don't be deceived. And what else are you going to say, you know? But that's all right. It's been Skype karma night. So it's ironic how I figured I wasn't around for the beginning and you weren't going to be around for the end, but here you go.
Well, I was able to get back on, but it is almost that time, and there you go. It is ironic that the Skype doesn't cooperate.
Yeah, tonight was very ironic. We've usually had impeccable Skype etiquette showing up and keeping a couple of drops here and there. The other thing ironic was I always try to avoid discussion on scripture, and we had a caller that dominated the topic. And here we go, and this is the 12th chapter. And thanks again, Chuck, for putting up with the Greek all this time.
Well, and thanks to everybody who did decide to listen. And I think it is always advisable to think and respond to all things in as objective a fashion as possible. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I think that's what we've been trying to do all this time. Thanks.
All right.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom. Freedom. American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology. They have all these great things that they're going to do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
Tell the truth, don't be bullshitting people. There's enough bullshit as it is. In fact, there's just enough. Did you know that? There's just enough bullshit to hold things together in this country. Bullshit is the glue that binds us as a nation. Where would we be without our safe, familiar American bullshit? Land of the free, home of the brave, the American dream. All men are equal. Justice is blind. The press is free. Your vote counts. Business is honest. The good guys win. The police are on your side. God is watching you. Your standard of living will never decline. And everything is going to be just fine. The official national bullshit story. I call it the American Okie Doke.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow, friendships to flourish, with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.